time for me to execute my clever plan. If only I had one. Caligula stepped to my side. He threw his arm around me like an old friend. You see, Apollo? I'm not crazy. I'm not cruel. I just take people at their word. If you promise me your life, or your heart, or your wealth, then you should mean it, don't you think? My eyes watered. I was too afraid to blink. Your friend Piper, for instance, Caligula said. She wanted to spend time with her dad. She resented his career, so guess what? I took that career away. If she'd just gone to Oklahoma with him like they'd planned, she could have gotten what she wanted. But does she thank me? No. She comes here to kill me. I will, Piper said, her voice a bit steadier. Take my word on that. Exactly my point, Caligula said. No gratitude. He patted me on the chest, sending starbursts of pain across my bruised ribs. And Jason Grace. He wants to be a priest or something, build shrines to the gods. Fine. I am a god. I have no problem with that. Then he comes here to wreck my yachts with lightning. Is that priest-like behavior? I don't think so. He strolled toward the swirling columns of wind. This left his back exposed. But neither Piper nor I moved to attack him. Even now, recalling it, I cannot tell you why. I felt so powerless, as if I were caught in a vision that had happened centuries before. For the first time, I sensed what it would be like if the triumvirate controlled every oracle. They would not just foresee the future, they would shape it. Their every word would become inexorable destiny. And this one. Caligula studied Meg McCaffrey. Her father once swore he wouldn't rest until he reincarnated the Bloodborne, the Silver Wives. Can you believe it? Bloodborne? Silver Wives? Those words sent a jolt through my nervous system. I felt I should know what they meant, how they related to the seven green seeds Meg had planted on the hillside. As usual, my human brain screamed in protest as I attempted to dredge the information from its depths. I could almost see the annoying file not found message flashing behind my eyes. Caligula grinned. Well, of course I took Dr. McCaffrey at his word. I burned his stronghold to the ground. But honestly, I thought I was quite generous to let him and his daughter live. Little Meg had a wonderful life with my nephew Nero, if she'd just kept her promises to him. He wagged his finger disapprovingly at her. On the starboard side of the room, Incitatus looked up from his golden oat bucket and belched.
Hey, Big C. Great speech and all. But shouldn't we kill the two in the whirlwind so Medea can turn her attention to flaying Lester alive? I really want to see that.
Yes, please, Medea agreed, her teeth clenched. No! Piper shouted. Caligula, let my friends go! Unfortunately, she could barely stand up straight. Her voice shook. Caligula chuckled. My love, I've been trained to resist charm speak by Medea herself. You'll have to do better than that if... Incitatus! Piper called, her voice a little stronger. Kick Medea in the head! Incitatus flared his nostrils.
I think I'll kick Medea in the head.
No, you won't! Medea shrieked in a sharp burst of charm speak. Caligula, silence the girl! Caligula strode over to Piper. Sorry, love. He backhanded her across the mouth so hard, she turned a full circle before collapsing.
Oh! Incitatus whinnied with pleasure. Good one!
I broke. Never had I felt such rage. Not when I destroyed the entire family of Niobids for their insults. Not when I fought Heracles in the Chamber of Delphi. Not even when I struck down the Cyclopes who had made my father's murderous lightning. I decided at that moment Piper McLean would not die tonight. I charged Caligula, intent on wrapping my hands around his neck. I wanted to strangle him to death, if only to wipe that smug smile off his face. I felt sure my godly power would return. I would rip the Emperor apart in my righteous fury. Instead, Caligula pushed me to the floor with hardly a glance. "Please, Lester," he said. "You're embarrassing yourself." Piper lay shivering as if she were cold. Crest crouched nearby, trying in vain to cover his massive ears. No doubt he was regretting his decision to follow his dream of taking music lessons. I fixed my eyes on the twin cyclones, hoping that Jason and Meg had somehow escaped. They had not. But strangely, as if by silent agreement, they seemed to have switched roles. Rather than raging in response to Piper being struck, Jason now floated deathly still. His eyes closed, his face like stone. Meg, on the other hand, clawed at her Ventus cage, screaming words I couldn't hear. Her clothes were in tatters. Her face was crosshatched with a dozen bleeding cuts. But she didn't seem to care. She kicked and punched and threw packets of seeds into the maelstrom, causing festive bursts of pansies and daffodils among the shrapnel. By the Imperial dais, Medea had turned pale and sweaty. Countering Piper's charm speak must have taxed her, but that gave me no comfort. Reverb and his guards would soon be back, bearing the hearts of the Emperor's enemies. A cold thought flooded through me. The hearts of his enemies? I felt as if I had been backhanded. The Emperor needed me alive, at least for the moment, which meant my only leverage. My expression must have been priceless. Caligula burst out laughing. "Apollo! You look like someone stepped on your favorite lyre," he tutted. "You think you've had it bad? I grew up as a hostage in my uncle Tiberius's palace. Do you have any idea how evil that man was? I woke up every day expecting to be assassinated, just like the rest of my family. I became a consummate actor. Whatever Tiberius needed me to be, I was, and I survived. But you, your life has been golden from start to finish. You don't have the stamina to be mortal." He turned to Medea. "Very well, sorceress. You may turn your little blenders up to puree and kill the two prisoners. Then we will deal with Apollo." Medea smiled. "Gladly." "Wait!" I screamed, pulling an arrow from my quiver. The Emperor's remaining guards leveled their spears, but the Emperor shouted, "Hold!" I didn't try to draw my bow. I didn't attack Caligula. Instead, I turned the arrow inward and pressed the point against my chest. Caligula's smile evaporated. He examined me with thinly veiled contempt. "Lester, what are you doing?"
"Let my friends go," I said. "All of them.
Then you can have me." The Emperor's eyes gleamed like the Strix's.
"And if I don't?"
I summoned my courage and issued a threat I never could have imagined in my previous 4,000 years of life. "I'll kill myself."
Chapter 32. "Don't make me do it. I'm crazy. I'll do it. I'll..." Ow! That really hurt.
Oh, no, thou shalt not!
Buzzed a voice in my head. My noble gesture was ruined when I realized I had, once again, drawn the arrow of Dodona by mistake. It shook violently in my hand, no doubt making me look even more terrified than I was. Nevertheless, I held it fast. Caligula narrowed his eyes. You would never. You don't have a self-sacrificing instinct in your body. Let them go. I pressed the arrow against my skin, hard enough to draw blood. Or you'll never be the sun god. The arrow hummed angrily.
Killeth thyself with some other projectile, knave! Of common murder weapons, I am none.
Oh, Medea, Caligula called over his shoulder. If he kills himself in this fashion, can you still do your magic?
You know I can't, she complained. It's a complicated ritual. We can't have him murdering himself in some sloppy way before I'm prepared.
Well, that's mildly annoying, Caligula sighed. Look, Apollo, you can't expect this will have a happy ending. I am not Commodus. I'm not playing a game. Be a nice boy and let Medea kill you in the correct way. Then I'll give these others a painless death. That's my best offer.
I decided Caligula would make a terrible car salesman. Next to me, Piper shivered on the floor, her neural pathways probably overloaded by trauma. Crest had wrapped himself in his own ears. Jason continued to meditate in his cone of swirling shrapnel. Though I couldn't imagine he would achieve nirvana under those circumstances. Meg yelled and gesticulated at me, perhaps telling me not to be a fool and put down the arrow. I took no pleasure in the fact that, for once, I couldn't hear her orders. The Emperor's guards stayed where they were, gripping their spears. Incitatus munched his oats like he was at the movies. Last chance, Caligula said. Somewhere behind me, at the top of the ramp, a voice called,
My lord!
Caligula looked over.
What is it, Flange? I'm a little busy here.
News, my lord.
Later.
Sire, it's about the northern attack.
I felt a surge of hope.
The assault on New Rome was happening tonight. I didn't have the good hearing of a Pandos, but the hysterical urgency in Flange's tone was unmistakable. He was not bringing the Emperor good news. Caligula's expression soured.
Come here, then, and don't touch the idiot with the arrow.
The Pandos Flange shuffled past me and whispered something in the Emperor's ear. Caligula may have considered himself a consummate actor, but he didn't do a good job of hiding his disgust.
How disappointing.
He tossed Meg's golden rings aside like they were worthless pebbles.
Your sword, please, Flange.
I...
Flange fumbled for his kanda.
Yes, lord.
Caligula examined the blunt, serrated blade, then returned it to its owner with vicious force, plunging it into the poor Pandos's gut. Flange howled as he crumbled to dust.
Caligula faced me. Now, where were we?
Your northern attack, I said.
Didn't go so well.
It was foolish of me to goad him, but I couldn't help it. At that moment, I wasn't any more rational than Meg McCaffrey. I just wanted to hurt Caligula. To smash everything he owned to dust. He waved aside my question.
Some jobs I have to do myself.
That's fine. You'd think a Roman demigod camp would obey orders from a Roman emperor, but alas.
The 12th Legion has a long history of supporting good emperors, I said, and of deposing bad ones.
Caligula's left eye twitched.
Oh, Boost, where are you?
On the port side, one of the horse groomer Pandai dropped his brush in alarm.
Yes, Lord.
Take your men,
Caligula said.
Spread the word. We break formation immediately and sail north. We have unfinished business in the Bay Area.
But, sire...
Boost looked at me, as if deciding whether I was enough of a threat to warrant leaving the Emperor without his remaining guards.
Yes, sire.
The rest of the Pandai shuffled off, leaving Incitatus without anyone to hold his golden oat bucket.
Hey, see, said the stallion. Aren't you putting the cart before the horse? Before we head off to war, you've got to finish your business with Lester.
Oh, I will, Caligula promised. Now, Lester, we both know you're not going to...
He lunged with blinding speed, making a grab for the arrow. I'd been anticipating that.
Before he could stop me, I cleverly plunged the arrow into my chest.
Ha! That would teach Caligula to underestimate me.
Dear listener, it takes a great deal of willpower to intentionally harm yourself. And not the good kind of willpower. The stupid, reckless kind you should never try to summon, even in an effort to save your friends. As I stabbed myself, I was shocked by the sheer amount of pain I experienced. Why did killing yourself have to hurt so much? My bone marrow turned to lava, my lungs filled with hot, wet sand. Blood soaked my shirt, and I fell to my knees, gasping and dizzy. The world spun around me as if the entire throne room had become a giant Ventus prison.
Villainy!
The arrow of Dodona's voice buzzed in my mind, and now also in my chest.
Thou didst not just impale me herein! Oh, vile, monstrous flesh!
A distant part of my brain thought it was unfair for him to complain, since I was the one dying. But I couldn't have spoken even if I wanted to. Caligula rushed forward. He grabbed the shaft of the arrow, but Medea yelled, Stop! She ran across the throne room and knelt at my side.
Pulling out the arrow could make matters worse, she hissed.
He stabbed himself in the chest, Caligula said. How can it be worse?
Fool, she muttered.
I wasn't sure whether the comment was directed at me or Caligula.
I don't want him to bleed out.
She removed a black silk bag from her belt, pulled out a stoppered glass vial, and shoved the bag at Caligula.
Hold this.
She uncorked the vial and poured its contents over the entry wound.
Cold,
complained the arrow of Dodona.
Cold! Cold!
Personally, I didn't feel a thing. The searing pain had become a dull, throbbing ache throughout my whole body. I was pretty sure that was a bad sign. Incitatus trotted over.
Whoa. He really did it. That's a horse of a different color.
Medea examined the wound. She cursed an ancient Colchian, calling into question my mother's past romantic relationships.
This idiot can't even kill himself right, grumbled the sorceress.
It appears that, somehow, he missed his heart.
"'Twas me, witch!"
the arrow intoned from within my rib cage.
"'Dost thou think I would fain allow myself to be embedded in the disgusting heart of Lester? I dodged and weaved!"
I made a mental note to either thank or break the arrow of Dodona later, whichever made the most sense at the time. Medea snapped her fingers at the Emperor.
Hand me the red vial.
Caligula scowled, clearly not used to playing surgical nurse.
I never rummage through a woman's purse, especially a sorceress's. I thought this was the surest sign yet that he was perfectly sane.
If you want to be the sun god, Medea snarled, do it.
Caligula found the red vial. Medea coated her right hand with the gooey contents. With her left, she grabbed the arrow of Dodona and yanked it from my chest. I screamed. My vision went dark. My left pectorals felt like they were being excavated with a drill bit. When I regained my sight, I found the arrow wound plugged with a thick red substance, like the wax of a letter seal. The pain was horrible, unbearable, but I could breathe again. If I hadn't been so miserable, I might have smiled in triumph. I had been counting on Medea's healing powers. She was almost as skilled as my son Asclepius, though her bedside manner was not as good, and her cures tended to involve dark magic, vile ingredients, and the tears of small children. I had not, of course, expected Caligula to let my friends go. But I had hoped, with Medea distracted, she might lose control of her venti. And so she did. That moment is fixed in my mind. Incitatus, peering down at me, his muzzle flecked with oats. The sorceress Medea examining my wound, her hands sticky with blood and magic paste. Caligula standing over me, his splendid white slacks and shoes freckled with my blood, and Piper and Crest on the floor nearby, their presence momentarily forgotten by our captors. Even Meg seemed frozen within her churning prison, horrified by what I had done. That was the last moment before everything went wrong. Before our great tragedy unspooled. When Jason Grace thrust out his arms and the cages of wind exploded. Chapter 33. No good news awaits. I warned you right at the start. Turn away, listener. One tornado can ruin your whole day. I'd seen the sort of devastation Zeus could wreak when he got angry at Kansas, so I was not surprised when the two shrapnel-filled wind spirits ripped through the Iulia Drusilla XII like chainsaws. We all should have died in the blast. Of that I'm certain. But Jason channeled the explosion up, down, and sideways in a two-dimensional wave, blasting through the port and starboard walls, bursting through the black ceiling that showered us with golden candelabras and swords, jackhammering through the mosaic floor into the bowels of the ship. The yacht groaned and shook. Metal and wood and fiberglass snapping like bones in the mouth of a monster. Incitatus and Caligula stumbled in one direction, Medea in the other. None of them suffered so much as a scratch. Meg McCaffrey, unfortunately, was on Jason's left. When the venti exploded, she flew sideways through a newly made rent in the wall and disappeared into the dark. I tried to scream. I think it came out as more of a death rattle, though. With the explosion ringing in my ears, I couldn't be sure. I could barely move. There was no chance I could go after my young friend. I cast around desperately and fixed my gaze on Crest. The young Pandos's eyes were so wide they almost matched his ears. A golden sword had fallen from the ceiling and impaled itself in the tile floor between his legs.
"Rescue Meg," I croaked, "and I will teach you how to play any instrument you wish."
I didn't know how even a Pandos could hear me, but Crest seemed to. His expression changed from shock to reckless determination. He scrambled across the tilting floor, spread his ears, and leaped into the rift. The break in the floor began to widen, cutting us off from Jason. 10-foot-tall waterfalls poured in from the damaged hull to port and starboard, washing the mosaic floors in dark water and flotsam, spilling into the widening chasm in the center of the room. Below, broken machinery steamed, flames guttered as seawater filled the hold. Above, lining the edges of the shattered ceiling, Pandai appeared, screaming and drawing weapons, until the sky lit up and tendrils of lightning blasted the guards into dust. Jason stepped out of the smoke on the opposite side of the throne room, his gladius in his hand. Caligula snarled.
You're one of those Camp Jupiter brats, aren't you?
I'm Jason Grace, he said. Former praetor of the 12th Legion. Son of Jupiter. Child of Rome. But I belong to both camps.
Good enough,
Caligula said. I'll hold you responsible for Camp Jupiter's treason tonight. Incitatus?
The Emperor snatched up a golden spear that was rolling across the floor. He vaulted onto his stallion's back, charged the chasm, and leaped it in a single bound. Jason threw himself aside to avoid getting trampled. From somewhere to my left came a howl of anger. Piper McLean had risen. Her lower face was a nightmare, her swollen upper lip split across her teeth, her jaw askew, a trickle of blood coming from the edge of her mouth. She charged Medea, who turned just in time to catch Piper's fist in her nose. The sorceress stumbled, pinwheeling her arms as Piper pushed her over the edge of the chasm. The sorceress disappeared into the churning soup of burning fuel and seawater. Piper shouted at Jason. She might have been saying, come on, but all that came out was a guttural cry. Jason was a little busy. He dodged Incitatus's charge, parrying Caligula's spear with his sword, but he was moving slowly. I could only guess how much energy he'd expended controlling the winds and the lightning.
Get out of here, he called to us. Go!
An arrow sprouted from his left thigh. Jason grunted and stumbled. Above us, more Pandai had gathered, despite the threat of severe thunderstorms. Piper yelled in warning as Caligula charged again. Jason just managed to roll aside. He made a grabbing gesture at the air, and a gust of wind yanked him aloft. Suddenly, he sat astride a miniature storm cloud with four funnel clouds for legs, and a mane that crackled with lightning. Tempest, his Ventus steed. He rode against Caligula, jousting sword versus spear. Another arrow took Jason in the upper arm.
I told you this isn't a game, yelled Caligula. You don't walk away from me alive.
Below, an explosion rocked the ship. The room split farther apart. Piper staggered, which probably saved her life. Three arrows hit the spot where she'd been standing. Somehow she pulled me to my feet. I was clutching the arrow of Dodona, though I had no memory of picking it up. I saw no sign of Crest or Meg or even Medea. An arrow sprouted from the toe of my shoe. I was in so much pain already, I couldn't tell if it had pierced my foot or not. Piper tugged at my arm. She pointed to Jason, her words urgent but unintelligible. I wanted to help him, but what could I do? I just stabbed myself in the chest. I was pretty sure that if I sneezed too hard, I would displace the red plug in my wound and bleed to death. I couldn't draw a bow or even strum a ukulele. Meanwhile, on the broken roofline above us, more and more Pandai appeared, eager to help me commit arrowside. Piper was no better off. The fact that she was on her feet at all was a miracle. The sort of miracle that comes back to kill you later when the adrenaline wears off. Nevertheless, how could we leave? I watched in horror as Jason and Caligula fought.
Jason bleeding from arrows in each limb now, yet somehow still able to raise his sword. The space was too small for two men on horses, yet they circled one another, trading blows. Incitatus kicked at Tempest with his golden-shod front hooves. The Ventus responded with bursts of electricity that scorched the stallion's white flanks. As the former praetor and the emperor charged past each other, Jason met my eyes across the ruined throne room. His expression told me his plan with perfect clarity. Like me, he had decided that Piper McLean would not die tonight. For some reason, he had decided that I must live too. He yelled again.
Go! Remember!
I was slow, dumbstruck. Jason held my gaze a fraction of a second too long, perhaps to make sure that last word sank in. Remember. The promise he had extracted from me a million years ago this morning, in his Pasadena dorm room. While Jason's back was turned, Caligula wheeled about. He threw his spear, driving its point between Jason's shoulder blades. Piper screamed. Jason stiffened, his blue eyes wide in shock. He slumped forward, wrapping his arms around Tempest's neck. His lips moved, as if he was whispering something to his steed. "Carry him away," I prayed, knowing that no god would listen. "Please, just let Tempest get him to safety." Jason toppled from his steed. He hit the deck face down, the spear still in his back, his gladius clattering from his hand. Incitatus trotted up to the fallen demigod. Arrows continued to rain around us. Caligula stared at me across the chasm, giving me the same displeased scowl my father used to before inflicting one of his punishments. "Now look what you've made me do."
"I warned you,"
Caligula said. Then he glanced at the pandai above.
"Leave Apollo alive.
He's no threat.
But kill the girl."
Piper howled, shaking with impotent rage. I stepped in front of her and waited for death, wondering with cold detachment where the first arrow might strike. I watched as Caligula plucked out his spear and drove it again into Jason's back, removing any last hope that our friend might still be alive. As the pandai drew their bows and took aim, the air crackled with charged ozone. The wind swirled around us. Suddenly, Piper and I were whisked from the burning shell of the Iulia Drusilla XII on the back of Tempest. The Ventus carrying out Jason's last orders to get us safely away, whether we wanted it or not. I sobbed in despair as we shot across the surface of Santa Barbara Harbor, the sounds of explosions still rumbling behind us. Chapter 34. Surfing accident. My new euphemism for worst evening ever. For the next few hours, my mind deserted me. I do not remember Tempest dropping us on the beach, though he must have done so. I recall moments of Piper yelling at me, or sitting in the surf, shuddering with dry sobs, or uselessly clawing gobs of wet sand and throwing them at the waves. A few times she slapped away the ambrosia and nectar I tried to give her. I remember slowly pacing the thin stretch of beach, my feet bare, my shirt cold from the seawater. The plug of healing goo throbbed in my chest, leaking a little blood from time to time. We were no longer in Santa Barbara. There was no harbor, no string of superyachts, just the dark Pacific stretching before us. Behind us loomed a dark cliff. A zigzag of wooden stairs led up toward the lights of a house at the top. Meg McCaffrey was there too. Wait,
When did Meg arrive?
She was thoroughly drenched, her clothes shredded, her face and arms a war zone of bruises and cuts. She sat next to Piper, sharing ambrosia.
I suppose my ambrosia wasn't good enough.
The Pandos crest squatted some distance away at the base of the cliff, eyeing me hungrily, as if waiting for his first music lesson to begin. The Pandos must have done what I'd asked. Somehow he'd found Meg, pulled her from the sea, and flown her here. Wherever here was. The thing I remember most clearly is Piper saying, "He's not dead." She said this over and over. As soon as she could manage the words, once the nectar and ambrosia tamed the swelling around her mouth. She still looked awful. Her upper lip needed stitches. She would definitely have a scar. Her jaw, chin, and lower lip were one gigantic eggplant-colored bruise. I suspected her dentist bill would be hefty. Still, she forced out the words with steady determination. "He's not dead." Meg held her shoulder.
"Maybe. We'll find out. You need to rest and heal."
I stared incredulously at my young master.
"Maybe? Meg, you didn't see what happened. He...
Jason.
The spear."
Meg glared at me. She did not say shut up, but I heard the order loud and clear. On her hands, her gold rings glinted. Though I didn't know how she could have retrieved them, perhaps, like so many magic weapons, they automatically returned to their owner if lost. It would be like Nero to give his stepdaughter such clingy gifts.
"Tempest will find Jason," Meg insisted. "We just have to wait."
Tempest. Right. After the Ventus had brought Piper and me here, I vaguely remembered Piper harassing the spirit, using garbled words and gestures to order him back to the yachts to find Jason. Tempest had raced off across the surface of the sea like an electrified waterspout. Now, staring at the horizon, I wondered if I could dare hope for good news. My memories from the ship were coming back, piecing themselves together into a fresco more horrible than anything painted on Caligula's walls. The Emperor had warned me. This is not a game. He was indeed not Commodus. As much as Caligula loved theatrics, he would never mess up an execution by adding glitzy special effects, ostriches, basketballs, race cars, and loud music. Caligula did not pretend to kill. He killed.
"He's not dead."
Piper repeated her mantra, as if trying to charm speak herself as well as us. "He's gone through too much to die now. Like that." I wanted to believe her. Sadly, I had witnessed tens of thousands of mortal deaths. Few of them had any meaning. Most were untimely, unexpected, undignified, and at least slightly embarrassing. The people who deserved to die took forever to do so. Those who deserved to live always went too soon. Falling in combat against an evil emperor in order to save one's friends? That seemed all too plausible a death for a hero like Jason Grace. He'd told me what the Erythrian Sibyl said. If I hadn't asked him to come with us.
"Don't blame yourself," said selfish Apollo. "It was his choice."
"It was my quest," said guilty Apollo. "If not for me, Jason would be safe in his dorm room, sketching new shrines for obscure minor deities. Piper McLean would be unharmed, spending time with her father, preparing for a new life in Oklahoma." Selfish Apollo had nothing to say to this, or he kept it selfishly to himself. I could only watch the sea and wait,
hoping that Jason Grace would come riding out of the darkness alive and well. At last, the smell of ozone laced the air. Lightning flashed across the surface of the water. Tempest charged ashore. A dark form laid across his back like a saddlebag. The Windhorse knelt. He gently spilled Jason onto the sand. Piper shouted and ran to his side. Meg followed. The most horrible thing was the momentary look of relief on their faces before it was crushed. Jason's skin was the color of blank parchment, speckled with slime, sand, and foam. The sea had washed away the blood, but his school dress shirt was stained as purple as a senatorial sash. Arrows protruded from his arms and legs. His right hand was fixed in a pointing gesture, as if he were still telling us to go. His expression didn't seem tortured or scared. He looked at peace, as if he'd just managed to fall asleep after a hard day. I didn't want to wake him. Piper shook him and sobbed.
Jason!
Her voice echoed from the cliffs. Meg's face settled into a hard scowl. She sat back on her haunches and looked up at me.
Fix him.
The force of the command pulled me forward, made me kneel at Jason's side. I put my hand on Jason's cold forehead, which only confirmed the obvious.
Meg, I cannot fix death. I wish I could.
There's always a way, Piper said. The physician's cure. Leo took it.
I shook my head. Leo had the cure ready at the moment he died, I said gently. He went through many hardships in advance to get the ingredients. Even then he needed Asclepius to make it. That wouldn't work here. Not for Jason. I'm so sorry, Piper. It's too late.
No, she insisted. No. The Cherokee always taught.
She took a shaky breath, as if steeling herself for the pain of speaking so many words.
One of the most important stories, back when man first started destroying nature. The animals decided he was a threat. They all vowed to fight back. Each animal had a different way to kill humans, but the plants, they were kind and compassionate. They vowed the opposite, that they'd each find their own way to protect people. So there's a plant cure for everything, whatever disease or poison or wound. Some plant has the cure. You just have to know which one.
I grimaced.
Piper, that story holds a great deal of wisdom. But even if I were still a god, I couldn't offer you a remedy to bring back the dead. If such a thing existed, Hades would never allow its use.
The doors of death, then, she said. Medea came back that way. Why not Jason? There's always a way to cheat the system. Help me!
Her charm speak washed over me, as powerful as Meg's order. Then I looked at Jason's peaceful expression.
Piper, I said, you and Jason fought to close the doors of death, because you knew it was not right to let the dead back into the world of the living. Jason Grace struck me as many things, but he wasn't a cheater. Would he want you to rend the heavens and the earth and the underworld to bring him back?
Her eyes flashed angrily.
You don't care because you're a god. You'll go back to Olympus after you free the oracles, so what does it matter? You're using us to get what you want, like all the other gods.
Hey,
Meg said, gently but firmly.
That won't help.
Piper pressed a hand on Jason's chest.
What did he die for, Apollo? A pair of shoes?
A jolt of panic almost blew out my chest plug. I'd entirely forgotten about the shoes. I tugged the quiver from my back and turned it upside down, shaking out the arrows. The rolled-up sandals of Caligula tumbled onto the beach. They're here. I scooped them up, my hands trembling. At least we have them. Piper let out a broken sob. She stroked Jason's hair.
Yeah, that's great. You can go see your oracle now. The oracle that got him killed.
Somewhere behind me, partway up the cliff, a man's voice cried out,
Piper?
Tempest fled, bursting into wind and raindrops. Hurrying down the cliffside stairs, in plaid pajama pants and a white t-shirt, came Tristan McLean. Of course, I realized. Tempest had brought us to the McLean house in Malibu. Somehow he had known to come here. Piper's father must have heard her cries all the way from the top of the cliff. He ran toward us, his flip-flops slapping against his soles, sand spraying around the cuffs of his pants, his shirt rippling in the wind. His dark, disheveled hair blew in his eyes, but it did not hide his look of alarm.
Piper, I was waiting for you, he called. I was on the terrace and...
He froze. First seeing his daughter's brutalized face, then the body lying on the sand.
Oh, no, no.
He rushed to Piper.
What is it? Who?
Having assured himself that Piper was not in imminent danger of dying, he knelt next to Jason and put his hand against the boy's neck, checking for a pulse. He put his ear to Jason's mouth, checking for breath. Of course, he found none. He looked at us in dismay. He did a double take when he noticed Crest crouched nearby, his massive white ears spread around him. I could almost feel the mist swirling around Tristan McLean as he attempted to decipher what he was seeing, trying to put it into a context his mortal brain could understand.
Surfing accident? He ventured. Oh, Piper. You know those rocks are dangerous. Why didn't you tell me? How did... Never mind.
With shaking hands, he dug his phone from the pocket of his pajama pants and dialed 911. The phone squealed and hissed.
My phone isn't... I don't understand.
Piper broke down in sobs, pressing herself to her father's chest. At that moment, Tristan McLean should have broken once and for all. His life had fallen apart. He'd lost everything he'd worked for his entire career. Now, finding his daughter injured and her former boyfriend dead on the beach of his foreclosed property, surely that was enough to make anyone's sanity crumble. Caligula would have another reason to celebrate a good night of sadistic work. Instead, human resilience surprised me once again. Tristan McLean's expression turned steely. His focus cleared. He must have realized his daughter needed him, and he couldn't afford to indulge in self-pity. He had one important role left to play. The role of her father.
Okay, baby, he said, cradling her head. Okay. We'll figure this out. We'll get through it.
He turned and pointed at Crest, still lurking near the cliff.
You!
Crest hissed at him like a cat. Mr. McLean blinked, his mind doing a hard reset. He pointed at me.
You! Take the others up to the house. I'm going to stay with Piper. Use the landline in the kitchen. Call 911. Tell them...
He looked at Jason's broken body.
Tell them to get here right away.
Piper looked up, her eyes swollen and red.
and Apollo. Don't come back. You hear me? Just go.
Pipes, her father said. It's not there.
Go!
She screamed.
As we made our way up the rickety stairs, I wasn't sure which felt heavier. My exhausted body, or the cannonball of grief and guilt that had settled in my chest. All the way to the house, I heard Piper's sobs echoing off the dark cliffs.
Chapter 35. If you give a Pandos a ukulele, he will want lessons. Don't. The news simply went from bad to worse. Neither Meg nor I could make the landline function. Whatever curse afflicted demigod use of communications, it prevented us from getting a dial tone. In desperation, I asked Crest to try. For him, the phone worked fine. I took that as a personal affront. I told him to dial 911. After he failed repeatedly, it dawned on me that he was trying to punch in IXII. I showed him how to do it correctly.
Yes, he said to the operator. There is a dead human on the beach. He requires help. The address?
12 Oro del Mar, I said. Crest repeated this.
That is correct. Who am I?
He hissed and hung up.
That seemed like our cue to leave. Misery upon misery. Gleason Hedges' 1979 Ford Pinto was still parked in front of the McLean house. Lacking a better option, I was forced to drive it back to Palm Springs. I still felt terrible, but the magic sealant Medea had used on my chest seemed to be mending me. Slowly and painfully. Like an army of little demons with staple guns running around in my ribcage. Meg rode shotgun, filling the car with a smell like smoky sweat, damp clothes, and burning apples. Crest sat in the back seat with my combat ukulele, picking and strumming, though I had yet to teach him any chords. As I'd anticipated, the fretboard was much too small for his eight-fingered hand. Every time he played a bad combination of notes, which was every time he played, he hissed at the instrument, as if he might be able to intimidate it into cooperating. I drove in a daze. The farther we got from Malibu, the more I found myself thinking, no, surely that didn't happen. Today must have been a bad dream. I did not just watch Jason Grace die. I did not just leave Piper McLean sobbing on that beach. I would never allow something like that to happen. I'm a good person. I did not believe myself. Rather, I was the sort of person who deserved to be driving a yellow Pinto in the middle of the night with a grumpy, raggedy girl and a hissing, ukulele-obsessed Pandos for company. I wasn't even sure why we were returning to Palm Springs. What good would it do? Yes, Grover and our other friends were expecting us, but all we had to offer them was tragic news and an old pair of sandals. Our goal was in downtown Los Angeles, the entrance to the burning maze. To make sure Jason's death was not in vain, we should have been driving straight there to find the Sybil and free her from her prison. Ah, but who was I kidding? I was in no shape to do anything. Meg wasn't much better off. The best I could hope for was to make it to Palm Springs without dozing at the wheel. Then I could curl up at the bottom of the cistern and cry myself to sleep. Meg propped her feet on the dashboard. Her glasses had snapped in half, but she continued to wear them like skewed aviator goggles. Give her time, she told me. She's angry. For a moment, I wondered if Meg was speaking of herself in the third person.
That's all I needed. Then I realized she meant Piper McLean. In her own way, Meg was trying to comfort me. The terrifying marvels of the day would never cease. I know, I said. You tried to kill yourself, she noted. I thought it would distract Medea. It was a mistake. It's all my fault. Nah, I get it. Was Meg McCaffrey forgiving me? I swallowed back a sob. Jason made a choice, she said. Same as you. Heroes have to be ready to sacrifice themselves. I felt unsettled, and not just because Meg had used such a long sentence. I didn't like her definition of heroism. I'd always thought of a hero as someone who stood on a parade float, waved at the crowd, tossed candy, and basked in the adulation of the commoners. But sacrificing yourself? No, that would not be one of my bullet points for a hero recruitment brochure. Also, Meg seemed to be calling me a hero, putting me in the same category as Jason Grace. That didn't feel right. I made a much better god than a hero. What I'd told Piper was true about the finality of death. Jason would not be coming back. If I perished here on Earth, I would not be getting a do-over either. I could never face that idea as calmly as Jason had. I had stabbed myself in the chest, fully expecting that Medea would heal me, if only so she could flay me alive a few minutes later. I was a coward that way. Meg picked at a callus on her palm. You were right about Caligula, Nero. Why I was so angry. I glanced over. Her face was taut with concentration. She'd said the emperor's names with a strange detachment, as if she were examining deadly virus samples on the other side of a glass wall. And how do you feel now? I asked. Meg shrugged.
The same. Different. I don't know. When you cut the roots off a plant, that's how I feel. It's hard.
Meg's jumbled comments made sense to me, which wasn't a good sign for my sanity. I thought about Delos, the island of my birth, which had floated on the sea without roots until my mother, Leto, settled on it to give birth to my sister and me. It was difficult for me to imagine the world before I was born, to imagine Delos as a place adrift. My home had literally grown roots because of my existence. I had never been unsure of who I was, or who my parents were, or where I was from. Meg's Delos had never stopped drifting. Could I blame her for being angry? Your family is ancient, I noted. The line of Plymnaeus gives you a proud heritage. Your father was doing important work at Aethales. The Bloodborne, the Silver Wives. Whatever those seeds are that you planted, they terrified Caligula. Meg had so many new cuts on her face, it was difficult to tell whether or not she was frowning. And if I can't get those seeds to grow? I didn't hazard an answer. I could not handle any more thoughts of failure tonight. Cress poked his head between the seats.
Can you show me the C minor 6 tricord now?
Our reunion in Palm Springs was not a happy one. Just from our condition, the dryads on duty could tell we brought bad news. It was 2 in the morning, but they gathered the entire population of the greenhouses in the cistern, along with Grover, Coach Hedge, Melly, and Baby Chuck. When Joshua Tree saw Crest, the dryads scowled.
Why have you brought this creature into our midst?
More importantly, Grover said, where are Piper and Jason? He met my gaze, and his composure collapsed like a tower of cards.
Oh, no. No.